traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast, brought to you by API. This is the show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 399, and I am suffering immensely. I ate too much crawfish yesterday, and now I hate my life.
You think you hate your life? Imagine what the crawfish think.
Oh, they don't have lives anymore because they're being processed.
They're being processed. Well, let's hope you feel better soon. You know why?
Why?
Because this week we'll be at the Gas Compression Association Conference and Expo in lively Galveston, Texas. I'll be delivering a keynote, and then you and I will be doing a live podcast. That will be on Tuesday the 26th, which will probably be after the show is published, so it'll be too late to join us. However, my keynotes, for some reason this year, are filling up, so if you want me to come deliver a keynote, let me know now. Also, if you'd like us to bring the Oil and Gas This Week to your event, no matter what it is, people love it. It's a great thing to do for like a happy hour or luncheon or whatever. Just reach out to us.
And I'll have to rush back for the mixer we have happening on
Wednesday.
That's
right. Our mixer's actually this Wednesday. What's the day of this Wednesday?
I don't know.
27th? Yeah. Typically, our mixers are on Thursday. We had to move it back on Wednesday. So if you're listening and you think it's on a Thursday, make sure that you...
Well, understand. We didn't want it to interfere with opening day for the Astros, so, which is happening on Thursday.
That's not why we couldn't do it. It's a good one, though. But yeah, just make sure you show up there on Wednesday. It's going to be a blast. We got a review. You want to read?
Boy, do we have a review. 3 stars. Informative, but I like listening to the podcast for news and updates on the industry. Their format and reporting is top-notch. However, the climate change denialism diminishes their content's true value. The activism side isn't without problems, but there are many people from the industry trying to find solutions to these problems, which, for better or worse, have been accelerated by our industry. From carbon capture and sequestration to geothermal energy, engineers and geoscientists are working on solutions, and outright denialism does nothing but demonetize the industry in the eyes of a layperson. I wish the host would learn and talk more about these works rather than making snarky remarks every time the topic of climate change comes up.
Yes, let me go ahead and address this straight on. I don't like talking about climate change. I don't like talking about politics on this show. I have lost friends because of my views on climate change. We have lost sponsors because of it. I catch a lot of flack online because of my views. But here's the deal. I have a responsibility to myself, my family, to my friends, and to our listeners to put what I consider the truth out there. Now, remember, I am not some old fuddy-dud. Okay, maybe I am an old fuddy-dud, but I'm an educated old fuddy-dud. I am an educated environmentalist. I was born in 1965, been around for a while, understand a lot about big data analytics. And the thing about man's impact to climate, in my opinion, and this should hopefully be in your opinion as well, is that before we try to adjust anything to do with our climate on this planet, we need to be 100% sure. This is not one of the things that we're okay being 80% sure or 90 or 95 or 99. We have to be 100% sure. And I've spent a decade researching this. So who's the person that left the review?
I don't know. It's like some zeros and S, a D, and an 11.
For the person that left the review, I respect your opinion. Let me ask you a couple of things. Have you ever logged into CMIP5? Probably not. I have. You can check it out. It's open source. Every one of y'all listening can log in. Search for either mark.lacour@oggn.com or oggn2. You'll see they've been pulling data sets for years out of a CMIP5, which is a climate model everybody references. A couple of things off the top of my head. The numbers don't add up. The climate model is flawed. If you follow the standard scientific method, if this climate model is flawed, it should not be used. Remember, it needs to be 100%. Next thing is greenhouse effect. Most of y'all listening understand that's a natural cycle, right? So the whole reason we're here, the Earth is naturally warmer than it should be because of the greenhouse effect. And the whole thing that's under contention is, has man's activity increased the greenhouse effect by releasing greenhouse gases? I want you to do something right now, which I bet you've never done. You're listening to this probably on your phone. Take your phone, open up your browser, type this in word for word. What has the strongest greenhouse effect? What has the strongest greenhouse effect? What you'll see come up is not CO2 and it's not methane. It is water vapor. Once again, there is a doubt. I can go down the road of why nobody talks about water vapor. Then look at all the scientists and the climate experts out there that are saying this is a hoax. You don't ever hear about it. Spend 5 minutes looking it up and you'll see there's thousands and thousands of very well certified climate scientists saying that man's activity is not causing climate change. Then look at the natural history. We're in between ice ages. We had our last ice age about 15,000 years ago. Remember,
yep.
People walked here from Asia to the North America over the Bering Land Bridge because the oceans were 3,000 foot lower than they are now because that water was locked up in ice. If we're coming out of an ice age, then every year we hopefully will be warmer than the next. That's the trend we want to see. What we don't want to see is the next year being colder than this year, and that trend means we're heading to another ice age. Then look at man's history around this. Do you remember in the 70s, a person left a review when all of the world's scientists, all the world's politicians were screaming that we're heading to our next ice age? They spent millions and millions of dollars. There were movies made about it, series on every magazine. So this using a climate catastrophe to drive people to think and vote in a certain way, this has happened before. And then look at recent history. 1972, United Nations said we have 10 years to stop this ice age catastrophe. Do you remember when Al Gore said in 2008 that the Arctic will be ice free by 2013? What about 1989 when NASA predicted that New York would be underwater? On and on and on and on and on. All of those are doubts that I have uncovered in my pursuit of scientific accuracy on has man's activity affected climate change. And I'm telling you now, in my opinion, based upon a decade of research of crunching numbers, there's not a single piece of evidence that shows that man activity has influenced climate change. Climate change is natural. Like I said, we're in between ice ages. We warm up, we cool down, we warm up, we cool down.
Like that's a pendulum. Normal.
However, there's no proof. This is going to drive even more people to probably not listen to the show, but I'm trying to do the right thing by myself, by the people I care about, and by our listeners in educating you on things that sometimes are misrepresented on purpose so that it puts money in certain politicians' pockets. Bottom line. For this reviewer, I'm sorry. I think I am supporting the industry by talking about this. The common layperson doesn't understand a lot of stuff. And for the reviewer here, when you type in what I told you to type in and you see that water vapor is the strongest greenhouse effect, your cognitive bias is going to go, oh, well, that can't be true. And you're going to ignore it, but it's a fact. I don't like talking about climate change. Don't talk about politics, but don't think this is just a reflex from some old guy in the industry. This is, my opinion, is very well researched based upon a lot of science and supported by a lot of other experts on our planet.
Right. And I'm not going to stop being snarky. So just stop listening if you don't like it. I don't really care. So let's get into some news stories, Mark. There's a lot of things going on. First up is Mexico's oil giant delays platform repairs despite methane leaks.
We've had several articles in the last 2 or 3 years talking about some incidents with Pemex in the Mexican side of the Gulf of Mexico. Remember, we had that fire a couple of years ago that shut down a well, and unfortunately, some people lost their lives.
Yeah.
There were a couple of rigs that they had to abandon while they had to do some emergency maintenance. This one's interesting in that basically this rig is leaking natural gas like crazy. And if you don't know this, when you drill a well, whether it's offshore or on land, what comes out of that hole is not just oil or gas. It's a mixture of sand, water, oil, gas. When that gas cannot be brought to market, it's typically flared. In this case, they're not even flaring it. They're just dumping methane, which is a large component of natural gas, into the air because it's the only choice they have. Now, Pemex is saying they're going to work on this. They have money to get this thing fixed. The truth is Pemex is struggling financially, and they have been for years. Unfortunately, a lot of that has to do with corruptions. This rig, fingers crossed, to me, looks like a disaster waiting to happen. They need to put money into this. They need to shut down operations, get that crew off the rig, get these natural gas leaks taken care of, and then make sure there's nothing else wrong with the rig. Because if they're leaking this much natural gas, what else is not up to specs?
Right, yeah.
fingers crossed that nobody gets hurt on this. Come on, Pemex, do the right thing. Shut this rig down. I know you'll lose money. Get the money. Repair what needs to be repaired on there. Bring it up to safety standards and get the rig back out there and start producing some more oil. But this is ridiculous that they're still operating this rig while it's releasing this much natural gas uncontrolled.
Okay, next up, 16 states sue federal government over LNG permitting pause.
You know what's interesting, like reading through this, and we've talked about this before, our current administration is doing this for one reason only, and that we're headed to an election cycle. The same current administration was singing the praises of LNG just a year ago. This does a lot of things, but you want to know one of the things that I didn't think of that was mentioned in this article, and they're 100% true. Our own governor here in Texas said, you know what? The amount of natural gas we produce here in Texas is destined to be put in the system, put in pipelines, and turned to LNG to help feed the energy needs of the rest of the world. You have now stopped our ability to do that, but we're still producing that much natural gas. What's the solution? We're going to have to flare it. So, current administration, you are increasing the amount of flaring, which is something you said you don't like. And actually, I don't like it either. And nobody in our industry likes it because you put this pause on LNG permitting, which means that the natural gas that normally would go to these LNG plants turned to liquid, moved around the world to give people cheap, abundant, reliable
energy. So we're just wasting gas.
They're just wasting gas and they're hurting the environment. If you read in here, I think we had a comment a while back. There's some activists in the coast of Louisiana saying that this is good news because LNG is polluting their coastal communities in Louisiana. We had a comment a while back when I mentioned this before. I need to be very clear here. LNG, when it's released in the atmosphere accidentally, does not pollute. It just turns back into the gas, which is predominantly methane. That methane, you may believe, is bad for the environment, but it's not as bad for the environment as crude oil sitting on your coast and covering waterfowl and fisheries and everything else.
Yeah.
So for the coastal communities that are in Louisiana that are worried about the pollution, the pollution that's not going to happen from LNG is the same type of pollution that would happen if they had a crude spill. I would much rather live next to an LNG spill than
a crude spill. Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be interesting to see where this goes. What's going to happen, I believe, is that right when we get through the election cycle, regardless of which side gets elected, somebody will do an executive action and this will just go away. However, the delay is going to ripple through our LNG industry for decades, and it's going to ripple through our industry for decades in a not good way. So let's hope that somehow somebody removes this pause before we get to the actual elections in November. But I don't think it's going to happen until after the elections.
Yeah. Okay. Fourth Russian Lukoil exec found dead by apparent suicide.
Man.
Got a lot of gloom and doom in this episode, but.
Let's see. So this guy, Robertus, everybody said he was fine. The next day he was found hung in his office. Then they had the chairman had acute heart failure in October 23. And then the previous chairman before him fell out of like a 10-story window accidentally in a hospital. Prior to that, one of the top executives was found dead in his basement under mysterious circumstances and on and on and on and on. Do I think this Russian Lukoil executive died of a suicide? Nope.
No.
Nope.
No. Putin just got reelected.
Do I think this is politics at the Russian level correcting what Lukoil is doing so that it can fit into Vladimir Putin's bigger strategy? Yes. Mm-hmm. Will there ever be any way to prove this? And if we could, what we do about it? It doesn't matter.
Yep.
I just hate to see people lose their lives. And I don't think this guy committed suicide at all.
There's just too many coincidences. Yeah, just too many.
And I don't know what's going to happen with Lukoil. We're going to get into some of the other things that are happening with Russian oil. But, I mean, Lukoil's obviously not going to go bankrupt. But the amount of pressure their leadership team has to be under. And when I say pressure, I don't mean like the pressure like losing your job. I mean pressure like losing your life.
It's a different level.
Yeah, it's just ferocious. I suspect that a lot of their top talent is going to disappear. I don't mean like never be seen again. I mean like try to get out of Lukoil as fast as they can.
As one should.
Yeah. We're going to have to see what happens with Russia. I think Russia's headed toward a depression of epic proportions that may even bankrupt them like the former Soviet Union. But we'll keep an eye on this.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening over there right now. And speaking of, India halts Russia oil supplies from sanctioned tanker giant.
I'm only laughing because you remember the last time we talked about how our State Department did something really cool
mm-hmm.
in that instead of trying to get India to abide by our sanctions, not buy Russian oil, they just basically said, we're going to take the tankers away. So there you go, India. You can buy all the Russian oil you want. I don't know how you could get it across the ocean. Well, this article says it's working. And not only is it working, it looks like almost all of the buyers of Russian oil in India, all the government-owned refineries, all the private-owned refineries, all have had the same thing. It's like, we're not touching it. We're just not. Because the danger is they're going to pay for this crude that's under sanction, but then they're not going to be able to take delivery of it, but they're not going to get their money back.
Yeah.
Once again, when our current administration does something I don't like, I say it. And when they do something that works and I like, I'll give them total props. So this is a great solution to that problem. Now, here's the other thing. They don't talk about this in this article, but if that Russian crude can't get to market, that means that the Russians are going to give a discount for people to accept that crude because they got to get rid of it, right?
Yep.
This is going to actually lower the cost of Russian crude compared to what crude is going on the global market today in 2024 dramatically. There's already been a price discount on it because Russia needs to sell it. Now there's going to be an additional price break, at least to places like India, which then makes me think that China is going to be the net beneficiary. So China's to get the additional discount. China's going to buy Russian crude regardless of how it gets there.
Right.
Which means
they're right there anyway.
Which means China also has strategic petroleum reserves, just like we do. So does Europe. So does Japan. In the weird kind of screwed up way, this action is going to allow China to really bulk up its strategic petroleum reserves while ours are sitting on empty, which is not a good place to be from an economic or military conflict point of view. I almost wish we could buy this dirt cheap Russian crude just to fill up our strategic petroleum reserves. Now, of course, that would break laws. And
oh, right. Yeah, for sure.
Quite honestly, I wouldn't really want this to happen. But
still,
this is going to add another layer of discounting to that Russian crude. This is also means that India is going to have to buy their hydrocarbons from somebody else. I would not be surprised if right now there's a lot of negotiations going on with the super majors in India to actually sign long-term contracts, especially BP and Shell, who needs to catch up with Chevron and Exxon as far as revenue. I would not be surprised if 2 months from now, and we're doing our news articles, we talk about how BP and Shell signed a major long-term agreement with the Indian refineries, which actually I think would be good for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this next one's kind of heavy, pretty heavy. 5 dead, 1 missing after fire breaks out on Perenco-operated platform offshore Gabon.
Yeah, a moment of silence for all those that lost their lives. All right, so this is never good news, but still, it needs to be reported. Gabon's in Africa, I believe, in the middle of Africa, if I remember correctly. They had a platform. 5 people lost their lives. There's one person that is still missing. The merge teams are out there trying to find the missing individual. The fire has been extinguished. The area has been secured. This is a shallow offshore, so think of it like on the shelf, shallow offshore production platform. Let's hope and pray that they do root cause analysis here, figure out what went wrong, and put whatever measures in place so this will never happen again.
All right. Next up, Oxy deploys industry-first fully electric well service rig from Axis on Permian production wells.
I love this. In fact, I love this so much, they actually have the president of Axis' name in here. I'm going to actually reach out to him and tell him congratulations. They had to have this idea a few years ago and build these rigs, hoping that somebody would hire them. And they're doing something that is radically different, a pure electrically powered rig without diesel engines on it. Their president for Axis had to take a chance and convince his executive team and his board to do something like this. And it worked. And I'm glad Oxy hired them. The reason I love this is it's much more efficient to run an all-electric rig, especially if you can get utility or factory power, which they're set up to do that. They basically drop a transformer, cook it to the utility power, take that drop down voltage and amperage and just power the rig itself. It also gives them much more control. So it's safer. It's also less noise and less vibration.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's got to be quiet.
So, I mean, this is just a beautiful thing. I hope Axis gets a bunch of business from this article. Like I said, I'm going to reach out to the president, see if we can get him on one of the shows. This is genius. And then because it's a new rig, it has all the sensors gathering all the data, which means they're going to drive efficiencies over and over and over again for the operators they work for, like Oxy.
Yeah.
This is just, I think, a win-win all the way around. And I want to see more of this. It would be good if we could get to the point in this country, and we're not going to be able to do this in the rest of the world for a while, but in the U.S., even in places like the middle of nowhere in the Permian in New Mexico or West Texas or up in the Dakotas, If there's enough demand for it, you can get utility power ran. That's better for the environment. It's better for the equipment. It's better for the local communities. It's faster. It's cheaper. It's more efficient. It's just a win-win all the way around. So hats off to Oxy for doing this, but a big, big hats off to Axis for taking that chance and actually designing and put into production a fully electric rig. I want to learn more about that, but congratulations.
Super cool.
This is awesome.
Yeah. All right. U.S. Senator Joe Manchin vows infrastructure permitting reform will pass.
What are we going to do with this guy? He says one thing, something else happens later. Then he says something else happens. Oh, wait, that's not him. That's all politicians.
Yeah. All of them.
He was at Sarah Week, which we were there. Had a great time. This was the best Sarah page I think we've been to since the pandemic.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Even the way they fed the press was good. Sarah Week was great. So Joe's basically saying that legislation to reform permitting and infrastructure will get done. He says it's one of the top priorities. It should be one of the top priorities. Although I think that now that we're in an election year, our current administration, I don't think it's their top priority. I think their top priority is just to get reelected. We'll have to wait to see after the election.
What happens next?
What happens next, yes. But he does mention the IRA and the $369 billion tax credits and incentives for clean energy. Some of that actual oil and gas industry is tapping into, which I love. I think it's only fair. But one of the things that we have to get cleared up in this country soon, and it will probably happen right when the election is over with, is what are we going to do from a governmental point of view, federal government point of view? Are we going to continue to put roadblocks in the way for the oil and gas industry, which drives up cost, doesn't help with safety, increases or decreases the amount of energy that's available to people? Or are we going to step in and in a responsible way help the oil and gas industry do what it does best, which is power the world? Both political sides in this country have their faults as far as the way they look at the oil and gas industry. One side hates us. The other side doesn't really know what we do. This is a place where I'm going to step in and go, I think us as industry, as oil and gas industry, needs to stand up and elected representatives know what they need to do to make things better. Let them know that we need permitting reforms.
Well, they're too worried about trying to ban TikTok right now.
I know, which is...
Instead of filling up our reserve or doing anything to help our
actually,
industry.
Let me tell you how ridiculous that is. That was my last episode of The Balance Point. I talked about the TikTok man. And that's actually one of the things I brought up is like, really, with all the things going on in the world, this is what you're spending your political time on?
I got on Instagram and chewed out Dan Crenshaw. Did he respond? No. Did he read it? Probably not. But I'm like, really? This is what we're worrying about?
Dan better listen to you if he knows what's good for him.
I've met the guy.
Actually, so have I. Anyway, Joe Manchin vows the permitting reform will happen. I hope he's right because we need it. Let's go to the next one.
All right. EIA boosts USA crude oil production forecasts.
I don't always agree with the EIA on their production numbers. I think they're pretty spot on. Basically, over the next couple of years, they're saying that we're going to go up an additional, I think, 12 million barrels a day globally, which sounds about right to me. They don't talk about demand at all. I still think the demand's going to outstrip supply. I think that's going to happen right around the end of this year. And I think you'll see crude prices go up. Natural gas prices in the U.S. are historically low for a bunch of different reasons. This LNG pause on permitting is not helping the low gas prices.
Right.
I'm watching actually natural gas producers like EQT go, you know what? We're just going to pull wells. Like they literally are shutting down production because they just can't make any money on how low natural gas is. Yeah. Interesting. That's an outlier. What's happened with the low natural gas price in the U.S., it doesn't reflect natural gas prices in the rest of the world. It would be a great time for us to be exporting LNG, though, because it's so darn cheap here, and the rest of the world buys it at a premium. But the EIA forecast is they also brought in the voluntary cuts by OPEC and OPEC Plus. They basically are saying that with the cuts that they're going to see about 104.54 million barrels per day produced in the third quarter of this year. And they think that trend is going to go up. Remember, the world burns about 100 million barrels a day. So that's a slight surplus. Like I said, I agree with their production numbers globally. I think they're just about spot on. I do think the demand's actually be a little bit higher than that. I'm looking at demand being about 112, 115 million barrels per day while we're producing 104, and that delta's going to drive prices up. I really hope I'm wrong about that. I'd like to see these prices. These prices are in a good place. They're in a place where operators can make good profits and make good money, but they're low enough where it doesn't pass on the inflated dollars to the consumer. We're still struggling with supply chain oil and gas globally, but that's coming to an end, which will help us as well. I hope I'm wrong about the difference, but for now, I'm happy with the EI numbers. I think they're spot on as far as what the production is going to be.
Okie doke. ConocoPhillips Willow Project to reach first production in four more winters expects modest Permian growth.
Yep, and this is Ryan Lance, the CEO of ConocoPhillips, talking at CERAWeek. Somehow I missed this. I would have liked to actually listen to him in person. But basically, 4 more years, Willow will actually go to production. If you remember Willow, that was the Alaskan project that had went back and forth. Too many politicians got involved. Too many activists got involved. And eventually, ConocoPhillips got this thing up and lit, which is good because it's going to provide jobs to people that actually really need them in that part of the U.S., which is Alaska. This project, when it comes online, should produce about 180,000 barrels per day, which is a sizable chunk of production. And remember, that crude in Alaska is that heavy complex crude that our refineries love in the Gulf Coast. He also talks about the LNG export ban. And basically, he says actually the same thing that I said, that the seeds that our government is planting right now with this LNG export ban is going to take years to come to fruition. And when it comes to fruition, it's not going to be good, which I agree with him. He also talks about Permian growth. He expects that to continue. I agree with him there. And then he talks about consolidation and basically said, it's just time for it to happen. And it's not going to end anytime soon, which once again, I agree with him there. Please note that the CEO of ConocoPhillips does not call me for advice. We just happen to agree on a bunch of stuff here. I've actually met him before. Super smart guy. And my favorite thing is he is true industry. He literally is a petroleum engineer that has like 20 years experience. Yeah, just a good guy. But yeah, what Ryan Lance has said at CERAWeek, I think all this is 100% legit.
Good deal. Good deal. All right. Department of the Interior proposes second offshore wind auction in the Gulf of Mexico.
Let me just do this. Dun, 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 dun. If you remember the first one.
Yeah, it was a huge, pretty big huge failure. Deal.
They only had one company bid on it, and they had no intention of building actual wind farms. They wanted to buy it and flip it. And then even they got scared when they saw the prices and what was happening with wind farms. We're going through what I call offshore wind 1.0. The offshore wind financials don't work. And I know people are going to give me hate mail for this. They only work because they were propped up by government subsidies around the world, the UK, here in Europe. However, offshore wind is a really good option. It doesn't bother people in local communities. You have a steady supply of wind. And even though you're doing it in salt water with wave actions, the conditions actually are pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. So it makes it easy to engineer. And the same amount of engineering, procurement, and construction that it takes to build an oil production platform, let's say in the Gulf of Mexico, is almost identical to build a wind platform. And I love the idea mentioned earlier about Oxy using that electric rig on land in the Permian. I love the idea of generating electricity with offshore wind and then powered offshore drilling production facility. So I love the idea of this. However, the finances aren't working. You're seeing offshore wind projects being canceled all over the world. A lot of those projects had no decommissioning dollars built in it, so they're going to be abandoned. Actually, some of that's already happening as well. What needs to happen is this subsidized offshore wind business model needs to go away, which is going to take a couple of years. Once it goes away, people are going to come back to these offshore wind facilities and these leases and figure out a way to do it profitably. And I'm going to call that offshore wind 2.0. Remember, right now, right. 1.0. And at that point, it will stick. It will make financial sense.
I'm surprised they don't require bonds whenever they do these projects, because operators are required to have bonding in case something like that happens.
Even though it's the same group auctioning off the same blocks of
land
that you could actually drill wells in or produce offshore wind, the favoritism they played offshore wind is crazy financially.
Why? Well, I believe that. Yeah. It kind of blows my mind they don't put some kind of financial.
And it is BOEM. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to encourage offshore wind, and that's the problem in that when you have something new and it's a benefit to mankind, I think government should subsidize it for a while. I really do.
Yeah.
When the telephone system was built, was it 100 years ago? The government subsidized that to help get copper everywhere so everybody could have phone service. That's the right thing to do.
I get it.
But at some point, you got to stop subsidizing it so it can stand on its own 2 feet.
Right.
And with the Inflation Reduction Act, which has nothing to do with inflation, the amount of money they pumped in offshore wind and the same thing in the UK, they oversubsidized, especially offshore wind. So the finances only made sense with the subsidy money. It made no sense to actually get the electricity and sell it in the market. So like I said, this second round of offshore wind auction in Gulf of Mexico's fail. I'd be surprised if anybody bids on it. And there's going to be a decline in offshore wind construction and the production of offshore electricity for 4 or 5 years around the world. Then it's going to come back, but it's going to come back based on the finances in the market not being subsidized. And at that point, offshore wind will stick and it'll be here permanently. So we got to get through offshore wind 1.0 to get to offshore 2.0. Like I said, it's going to be 4 or 5 years before we get there. I do think it's cool that they're initiating a 60-day public comment period that's going to end the 20th of May of this year. If they get enough pro comments, they're going to go ahead and proceed with the auction. The next step will be a publication of final sale. I bet they don't even go to the next step. I bet they're going to get almost nobody in the public comments saying they want this to get done.
Doesn't really sound like it.
Makes sense. And once again, I love renewables. I love wind, solar, everything. It just, this doesn't make fiscal sense. And like I said, it's not going to go anywhere. The last one went almost nowhere. This one's going to go nowhere.
All right, last one. Oil executives talk down rapid shift to green energy as profits boom.
Yeah, so what is this in? This is in Financial Times. It's written from an anti-oil and gas point of view. As soon as you see the word big oil, the first word, the first paragraph, you know where this could go. Basically, it's CERAWeek, which we just came out of. This article is talking about how the executives of large oil and gas companies globally talked about how things are going good for their business, that the world has continuing need for more and more energy, and that the only thing that can provide it right now is hydrocarbons, and they're committed to producing those hydrocarbons environmentally responsibly and clean and make sure that we can provide the energy the world needs. But you get into some of the other comments in here, like the UN's World Meteorological Organization sounded a red alert as last year is the hottest year on record. Well, we hope that it's the hottest year on record. Every year we want it to be warmer, which means we're getting further and further away from our last ice age. Don't want to get into that again. Now, there's still the holdouts in here that there's a lot of talk from the renewable side, the anti-oil and gas activists, how this is just propping up something that's not good for the industry, it's not good for the planet. However, all those people that are saying that, and there are actually demonstrations outside of CERAWeek, which somehow I missed, all those people that are in that camp, I'm just curious, I wonder how they got to Houston. So let's be realists here. You're hypocrites, all of you. The oil and gas industry knows how to produce energy environmentally responsibly. Come join us, help us. If you think there's a problem with our industry, come help us fix the problem. Complaining about it while you're still using hydrocarbons is just hypocritical. Now, the very last thing in this article I want to talk about is Nir Nashor, who's the CEO of Saudi Aramco. And basically, he told the delegates at CERAWeek, and it's like, we're the only choice. The renewables did not pan out. The world's continuing to need more and more energy, and we have to be able to provide it in a way that makes sense to people on the planet. And I love that. Now, we had Foresight Energy that responded to that comment by saying, now the oil and gas industry is baring their teeth. Now the world knows these guys have never been part of the solution. Dude, we invented the solution. Like I said, come join us. Let's quit this us versus them. Understand that hydrocarbons are natural, that they're the most reliable source of energy we have on this planet, that we can produce them and use them environmentally responsibly. Yes, things need to change, but we're changing it. And if you want to see things change, just come join us. Let's quit all this big oil, us versus them, renewables versus hydrocarbons.
But that's how they keep us ununited. They keep us separated.
Well, it also puts money in bureaucratic.
Well, absolutely. Markets,
right? If the renewables industry would wholeheartedly step in and work with the oil and gas industry, and vice versa. If the oil and gas industry would wholeheartedly, with the right intent, work with renewables, and if the activists that hate our industry would find something else to hate, like...
Do they hate us having an electric rig on site? How about that?
They probably do, but the people that are protesting this that showed up in Houston that flew here to protest this, why don't you look at things like babies being still born at candlelight in countries because there's no electricity? Why don't you help with like wealth inequality or free education? Why don't you take your activist time and efforts and put it towards something that would help us and help this planet, not hurt us by causing a division that doesn't need to be there? The very last thing that I think on here is that if we don't make this shift, if we don't start producing more energy, we're going to inflict more mass suffering on children, which is 100% legit. I don't like to see anybody suffer. I don't like to see children suffer. I like the fact that the executives at CERAWeek owned that we need more energy and that we can do it environmentally responsible. The people that don't like our industry, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, quite frankly.
Oh, they're here for me.
But I'm offering you the olive branch. Reach out to me personally. I'd love to help you understand how this industry is good for everybody. And I'd love your help on some of the places that we need help with.
Yep.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Where do I usually do right here? I'll do the newsletter date, right? So sign up for our two newsletter, our Sunday update.
And somebody might try to give you my dog.
Yeah. I'm still getting people reaching out thinking that was, actually I had somebody reach out yesterday thinking that was hilarious. Actually, you know who also reached out and thought it was hilarious? Ew. Well, after covering our first Friday Q&A.
Oh, really?
Luthwick.
Oh, Luthwick, yeah.
Luthwick thought it was funny. They actually tried to give away your dog. Other thing is, if you want to know what we're doing, we got a lot of stuff coming up. Go join our LinkedIn page. It's where we post everything. Merch store, our babies and children's merchandise is finally up.
Oh, cool.
People are already buying it. So if you have a little one, And you want to support the oil and gas industry, go to OGGN.com, hit merchandise. We have clothing for them. And if one of your friends have a baby, buy them a onesie off the OGGN merch store. You'll have the only ones.
I'm probably going to buy Lauren one for her youngest son.
I also know somebody just had a baby. Maybe we look at somewhere down the road where OGGN, without making a penny to help promote our industry, maybe we just give away for new.
That'd be cool. Right. I think that's something we should probably do.
We'll probably look at that.
Yeah.
Talked earlier about us speaking. If you want me to come do something this year, better let me know fast. Also happy to bring this podcast and your others to your company events. First Friday Q&A is right around the corner. Go submit a question. Either go to OGGN.com and hit All I Got This Week. Submit a question there. You can also hit us up on any of the social channels. Just not Facebook Messenger. I'm still having people hit me up on Facebook Messenger.
And stop leaving videos, Ludwig.
It's Facebook Messenger. The OGGN Facebook gets checked about once a week. And so we end up missing things. So just Twitter.
Oh, I turned LinkedIn, it off.
Whatever. Just, so I don't just have let to, us know.
Yeah.
All right, ready to get out of here?
No, because we haven't done the rig count.
Oh, that's right. What is the rig count?
The rig count is not looking that great, but that just shows that the winter has ended. U.S. is down 5 at 624. Canada is down 38 at 169. Internationally, we're down 7 at 958. Thanks for forgetting my segment.
Hey, for once, I'm the hungry one, not you.
It's because I'm still full.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at OGGN.com.